There is a constant flow of data and opinion about the future of millennials. The pessimistic view, on average, millennials will have more debt and less income than any generation before them. They face job insecurity, increased risk of poverty, and may have to push back big goals like owning a home or getting married. What's the source of the problem and how does it get fixed? Michael Hobbs is a contributing journalist with HuffPost Online and the blogger behind Rotten in Denmark. He joins us now from Seattle. Hello there.
Hello.
You wrote about the financial future of millennials for Highline in a really, really compelling digital piece called Millennials Are Screwed. So I'm going to uncork an entire bottle of scotch before we start, just so I can like work through this. Why did you decide to work on this piece and present it in such an original way?
I think the touchstone thing to know about millennials is that everything you think you know about this generation is wrong. Most of
that sounds like BuzzFeed clickbait right there. BuzzFeed clickbait.
Well, it happens to be true. Most of our financial future is really bleak at the moment. And if you look at any statistic of financial well-being, we're way behind where our parents and our grandparents were at the same age. And so it's really not about the avocado toast or about us making different choices. It's about us having significantly worse options than previous generations.
There have been a lot of changes in the economy compared to what was going on for boomers and even for my generation, the Gen Xers. What would you say is the single most relevant change that has occurred that has the millennial generation being in the state they're in?
I think the biggest thing is probably the disintegration of work. That it's much more likely these days to work as a contractor or to work under some sort of contingent arrangement where you're a freelancer, you're in the gig economy, you're working for a company where there's really no ladder upward. A lot of what we find when we talk to young people is that their wages have been stagnant for years. They're kind of working on the fringes of a big company, but they're not really anywhere in the orbit of a company that can actually get them into the middle class. There's not much of a future for a lot of young people.
And if I think about what the working life is like in a big company, there's typically, even at minimum, a cost of living increase. But typically, if you're on some sort of a career track, you're going to get a raise over time as your responsibilities increase. Not so for freelancers.
What was really interesting is, you know, in a previous generation, if you were working for Kodak or for IBM, even if you were cleaning their offices, even if you were working in the cafeteria, you were a Kodak or an IBM employee. So if there were opportunities in entry-level work, you could get into those. There were training programs. There were ways that you could kind of work your way up from the mailroom. That trajectory doesn't really exist anymore. Most of the companies that are brand names now, like Google or Apple, all of the people cleaning their offices are contractors. The people working in their cafes are contractors. The people driving their buses are contractors. And so even if you're a great employee in their cafeteria, there's really no trajectory for you to get into the company and onto the ladder of opportunity. Those entry-level jobs simply aren't available to you. And so that's a big shift in our economy. We talk a lot about globalization, but domestic outsourcing now covers about 40% of American workers. And there just isn't any way to work your way up from those jobs.
You talk about becoming poor is not an event. It is a process. What do you mean by that?
Well, basically, when you look at what's happened to the safety net since about 1980, there is no safety net anymore. And so another way that work has disintegrated is it's much more precarious now. You don't have permanent contracts. You don't have unemployment benefits. You don't have insurance. Really, if one thing goes wrong, then you lose your job, you lose your health care. It kind of begins this entire spiral. And what you find when you start interviewing people that are in poverty, usually what happens is they've gone on this spiral. There were places where if there were fail-safes in place, they could stay in their apartment and not get evicted. They could get a medical bill waived, something like that. They'd actually be doing fine. Whereas now it's much more likely for you to end up in this spiral, and then it can take years for you to get back onto the ladder.
I joked about your BuzzFeed clickbait about everything you know about millennials is wrong, but give us some examples of what you mean by that. I mean, you argue that the generalizations that we make about millennials are actually affecting their financial situation.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, when you start talking to people about millennials, they say that millennials are lazy or they're entitled or they're selfish. And there's actually very little data on the ways in which this generation of young people is different from previous generations. I think our parents when they were 25 were probably idiots, and our grandparents when they were 25 were probably idiots, and lots of us when we were 25 were idiots.
I'm a notable exception to that. A notable exception.
I was not an exception to this.
Oh, well, I mean, sure, I got brought home for shoplifting, but, you know, I needed the gum, right? Yeah.
I think every generation of older people looks with wonder and bafflement at the generation of younger people. And that's no different that older people think that younger people are squandering their youth, blah, blah, blah. But what we have is we have the ways in which we're talking about young people are somehow obscuring the ways that young people actually have it much harder now. If you look at housing, healthcare, and education, the three real foundations of a middle-class, stable life, all of those have inflated more than three times. They're 400% more expensive now than they were for our parents. And so you often hear these things that, you know, you can get a flat-screen TV now, and it's so cheap, and a refrigerator is so cheap. And that's true. That's great. But the things that you actually need to achieve adulthood are way more expensive now than they used to be. And meanwhile, wages have been stagnant since 1970. And so that needs to be the starting point.
Two of the big cultural differences is that in Canada, we have the social safety net of healthcare, and our undergrad tuition is nowhere near what it costs at an Ivy League school in the U.S. But still, the themes that you're talking about are relevant and resonant for our millennials here, too. What do you think are some of the ways that we can address this issue?
I think a lot of it is political engagement. I mean, it's kind of a cliche to say that young people need to vote a lot more. But if you look at the turnout rate state to state, it's actually very variable. Some young people have turnout of 60%, and some places have turnout of 30%. And so there's a lot of procedures in the United States that make it harder for young people to vote. We're much more likely to have variable schedules. We're more likely to move around. We're more likely to not get registered. There's all these procedural things that we can do to make it easier to vote. And I think also a big thing is that millennials need to be more angry than they are. I think a lot of us have grown up in an environment where we think it's okay that college costs as much as it does, or it's okay that we're on one-year contracts over and over and over again rather than getting a full-time job. And it's not okay. There are political decisions that led to the situation that we're in. And I think we need to get political to fix these things. I mean, when you talk to millennials, what you hear is a lot of anger about the situation they're in and just amazement at how hard it is to work their way into the situation where their parents were in their early 30s. And we need to tap into that anger and do something with that anger. It's really important that we start working politically.
Why do you think that business leadership within the tech sector in particular hasn't been more engaged on this, given that many of those CEOs are millennials themselves, or if not millennials, you know, a couple of years out? Why haven't they taken this on and said, listen, we're going to ensure that it is not a contract culture at our company, or we're going to make sure that we help our new employees pay off their student loans or provide full health care? Why isn't the transformation coming from a corporate source?
Well, it's impossible for companies to do the right thing. We've created a financial sector where every publicly traded company, it doesn't make financial sense for them to provide decent working conditions to their employees, frankly. I mean, you have cases where CEOs have actually given in to unions and raised wages, and then their shareholders remove them. And so a lot of these companies are publicly traded, and frankly, they simply can't justify to their investors, we're going to pay more, we're going to provide a decent wage to people. It's simply impossible for them. And so what we've got is there's never good people or bad people. There's just structures and incentives. And the structure that we have now makes it impossible for companies to provide a living wage and decent benefits. And that's where we need to start working on things. Right now, it's really cheap to employ people as contractors. You save about 30% if you're not paying for their health care, you're not paying for Social Security, you're not paying all the other extra taxes that go along with having full-time direct employees. So, of course, big companies are going to switch out expensive employees for cheap ones. And that doesn't make them terrible people or whatever, but under a capitalist shareholder model, they have to do that. And so that's what they've been doing for 50 years now.
Just before we go here, what is a millennial's responsibility in this? You mentioned anger, you mentioned political engagement, but are there hacks that may not affect the systemic issues that you're talking about, but allow individuals to find a way to make it work for them in their own sphere of influence or sphere of control?
To be totally honest, I think the whole ethos of hacks is part of what got us here. Hmm. We're not going to get out of this with tweaks. We're not going to get out of this with little tips and tricks or BuzzFeed listicles, for that matter. We're going to get out of this through political engagement, mobilization, and being really angry about the situation that we're in. And that's where we need to start working. We need to start working locally. We need to start working on our own employees. We need to start boycotting. We need to start getting out into the streets. We need to be really angry. And I don't think that there is individual responsibility coming into play as far as what our conditions are. I think that just pits us against each other. I think we need to work together.
When will we see your name on a ballot and in what race?
I have spent way too much of my adulthood on Grindr to ever run for office. Thanks very much. I would be one of those behind the scenes.
Michael Hobbs, thank you very much for your time and your candor and your insight. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Michael Hobbs is a contributing journalist with HuffPost Highline and the author of Millennials Are Screwed.